There is a human tendency to not deal with our issues. We all have our issues. We all got our stuff. And one of the human protection devices that we have is to deflect. So if somebody gets a little too close to our issue and we feel uncomfortable, we deflect, we change the subject. And some are very good at deflecting. They're masters of it. Or they make jokes about it. They try to make light of it. And when you live that way, you just become more isolated and more alone. Doesn't solve the problem.
We as believers won't completely escape the grip of sin, but that doesn't mean we get to push it under the rug. We have to deal with it by confessing it to God and repenting. Today on The Connection, Skip Heitzig continues to trace the downhill step Samson took to lose his superhero cape. Stay tuned after the teaching when Skip and his wife Lenya share about why it's so important to honor our parents.
It's like a gauge to their obedience, their willingness to submit to God by how they submit to authority. And the first authority is in the home. And a couple words come to my mind, and the first is respect. When you talk to parents, you should always use respect.
February is the month of love. Unfortunately, in our culture today, people confuse love with lust. But lust is a sin with grave consequences, damaging you physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Skip Heitzig says that most importantly, it damages your relationship with God.
The warm, alluring breezes that temptation sends forth that draw us into its allure will leave us with that cold, icy, wintry distance from people that we love and from God.
Learn how to conquer lust with this month's resource from The Connection. For a donation to this ministry, you'll receive an impactful booklet by Skip Heitzig called Lust, How to Conquer It. You'll also receive a powerful teaching on CD called The Four Seasons of Failure, where Skip examines the destructive path we take when we allow sin to enter our lives. Order now by calling 800-922-1888 or by visiting connectiononline.org/offers.
Now, let's get into our study with Pastor Skip. Turn your Bible to Judges chapter 14.
Some believers will sail their ships so close to the lake of fire that their sails get singed. You don't want to live that way. Samson is living that way. According to verse 9, on his way back, he takes honey from a lion's corpse. Now, again, I remind you of the vow that he's taken. He is a Nazarite. And one of the things Nazarites can't do is touch a corpse. So reaching in and grabbing honey from a corpse of a lion is something that will break his vow. He's becoming defiled. Now he's ceremonially defiled. He's already relationally defiled, disrespecting his parents. He's already morally defiled because all he's thinking about is what he can see with his eyes and looking at a Philistine chick because she's pretty. Now he's ceremonially unclean. All of that to say, here's a Nazarite who is not taking his vows very seriously. And there's a good reason for that. It's because they're not important to him. They're just not that important to him. Maybe at one time they were, but they're not now. I meet people all the time who will say, "Oh, I used to go to your church. In fact, you dedicated me when I was a baby." And I always ask, "Did it work?" What do you mean, did it work? I mean, are you still dedicated to the Lord? Are you following? Well, you know, I've had a few setbacks. I go to church twice a year, Easter and Christmas. I'm there. Count on me. And you see, whatever past experience you've had, whatever past expression of faith you have made, it's all invalid unless it's translated into the present experience. Jesus said, "Many will say to me in that day, 'Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name? Have we not cast out demons in your name? Have we not done wonderful things in your name?' And I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness.'" The problem that Samson had with women was really a problem Samson had with God. God wasn't first in his life. God wasn't supreme in his life. The Bible has a word for that. It's called idolatry. Anything or anyone that replaces supreme devotion to God is an idol. So I know that God is your God by creation. You're here, you're alive, he created you. I know that for many of you, God is your God by redemption, he saved you. My question is God your God by devotion? Are you devoted to him? Well, I've been dedicated to God. Great. Are you devoted to him now? Samson was not. He disregarded his God. Let's look at the third step he takes. He's going downhill with every step. He distanced his friends. He distanced his friends. In verse 10, now we're going to look at two verses, and as we read them, I want you to notice what is there and what's not there. Verse 10, so his father went down to the woman, and Samson gave a feast there, for young men used to do so. And it happened when they saw him that they brought 30 companions to be with him. Now notice what's there. First of all, there's a feast. And the word for feast, the Hebrew word in the text for feast, is a drinking feast. Okay, so once again, he's taken the vow of a Nazarite. Nazarites don't drink intoxicating drink. This dude's having a beer bash. It's a bachelor party. Yes, young men used to do so, but not Nazarite young men. Not this young man. So this Nazarite has a drinking party. Intoxicating beverages would certainly be a part of that. And notice his dad is with him. Now, I don't know why his dad is with him, but I notice it is in the text, so I deal with it. One commentator says, perhaps his father was there to reach out to his son in one sort of last attempt to stop a marriage that he couldn't sanction. This is just a way to say, please, son, don't do this. So that's what's there. What I want you to see is what's not there. There are 30 Philistine men in the groom's party that he doesn't even know. They give him 30 dudes off the street to be part of the wedding party. If he doesn't know her, he certainly doesn't know them, but they just bring him in. Here's my question. Where are his friends? Where are Samson's friends? Why didn't he bring his own? Now listen carefully. In Jewish weddings, there was a group of men called the friends of the bridegroom. Jesus even mentions it in Matthew 9, the friends of the bridegroom. Where are the friends of this bridegroom? It suggests to me that Samson didn't bring any of his friends. They had to round up 30 Philistines to be his new best friends for his own wedding. So why didn't he bring his friends? Well, either he didn't have any, or they didn't want to come with him and be a part of this wedding. It's one of those two options. Either he didn't have any, or they didn't want to come and be a part, or he just didn't tell anybody. So he didn't bring his own friends. One thing we know for sure about Samson, whether you read it in chapter 13, 14, 15, or 16, is this guy was a loner. Know anybody like that? I mean, a pure loner. There's no record of him marching with an army, working with a band of soldiers. We never read of him strategizing with other leaders. We never see him surrounded by good friends. He always acts alone. Always alone. And that is not good. That is not healthy. Proverbs 18, verse 1, a man who isolates himself seeks his own desire. He rages against all wise judgment. That is Samson. He's isolated himself. He rages against wise judgment. His parents, his God, his vows. He's acting alone. And a person like that is just easy pickings, easy prey for the enemy. You know, one of the things I love about computers is this thing called spell check. On one hand, it drives me nuts, especially with my smartphone, because it's like thinking it's smarter than I am. And I write a word down, it corrects it, and it sends, and it's like, no, I didn't mean to say that. You have to then correct the correction, right? But when I work in a Word document, like on my computer, I love spell check. Because I'm not always the best speller. I try to be, but I forget how things are spelled. And so it kind of stops and goes, no, you're wrong. And there's three options you can pick from. These three words. Would any of these words be good for you? And I go, yeah, actually, I like that one. Okay, good. And now it's spelled it right. I say, thank you. Wouldn't it be great to have spell check in life? like mistake check. You're going around doing your thing, and then every day something comes up and goes, you may not want to do that. That's kind of a bad move. Let me give you three options to choose from. Wouldn't that be great? Let me tell you something. You have that. They're called friends. Real friends will do exactly that. They're your spell check. They're your mistake check. Your good friends who know you will say, I see you walking down a bad road. I know you. I know your background. And I love you enough to get in your grill and tell you, not good. You may want to check another option, another road. Samson had parents whom he disrespected, and he probably had friends whom he distanced, pushed away. So you can see these downhill steps. He disrespected his parents. He disregarded his God. He distanced his friends. Let me give you a fourth step downward in this chapter. He downplayed his failure. Let's pick it up in verse 12. This is now the wedding feast. Samson said to them, these 30 new best friends, let me pose a riddle to you. If you can correctly solve and explain it to me within the 7 days of the feast, then I will give you 30 garments and 30 changes of clothing. But if you cannot explain it to me, then you shall give me 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing. And they said to him, pose your riddle, that we may hear it. And he said to them, out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet. Now for 3 days, they could not explain the riddle. But it came to pass on the seventh day that they said to Samson's wife, entice your husband that he may explain the riddle to us, or else we will burn you and your father's house with fire. Can I just say, you don't want guys like this at your wedding. Have you invited us in order to take what is ours? Is that not so? Then Samson's wife wept on him and said, you only hate me. You do not love me. You've posed a riddle to the sons of my people, but you have not explained it to me. And he said to her, look, I haven't explained it to my father or mother. Should I explain it to you? And so she wept on him the 7 days while their feast lasted. And it happened on the seventh day that he told her, because she pressed him so much. Then she explained the riddle to the sons of her people. So the men of the city said to him on the seventh day before the sun went down, what is sweeter than honey? And what is stronger than a lion? And he said to them, if you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle. Now, this marriage is not off to a very good start. He's got a wife who's crying for their honeymoon. He's got 30 guys who want to kill his wife and father-in-law. And he calls his wife a cow, right? So just not good stuff happening. Wedding feast lasted for 7 days. During the seven-day feast, as a matter of protocol, it was standard practice to pose riddles, to have little word games, to have little conversations that would be like a battle of the wits, a friendly battle of the wits. It was very commonplace. But what I want you to notice is the subject of Samson's riddle. What is the subject? It's the honey he took from the carcass of a lion. In other words, Samson constructed his riddle based on the experience of his own sin. He made a joke out of his sin. It's very lighthearted that it works its way into a riddle. I mean, it's bad enough that he disobeyed God, but it takes a special kind of callousness to make a joke out of disobeying God. Well, they can't figure it out. Coax your husband. She tells the riddle, and the wedding feast is about over. There is a human tendency to not deal with our issues. We all have our issues. We all got our stuff. And one of the human protection devices that we have is to deflect. So if somebody gets a little too close to our issue and we feel uncomfortable, we deflect. We change the subject. And some are very good at deflecting. They're masters of it. Or they make jokes about it. They try to make light of it. And when you live that way, you just become more isolated and more alone. Doesn't solve the problem. This is another step downward for Samson. He disrespected his parents. He disregarded his God. He distanced his friends. And now he downplayed his failure. Look at the fifth and final one in this chapter. He decimated his enemies. Look at verse 19. Then the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily. Okay, that sounds good, but watch what he does with that power. And he went down to Ashkelon and killed 30 of their men and took their apparel and gave the changes of clothing to those who had explained the riddle. So his anger was roused. Notice that phrase. His anger was aroused, and he went back to his father's house. And Samson's wife was given to his companion, that's his best man, who had been his best man. So Samson is a man with a cold heart and a hot head. To pay his debt, he goes 23 miles away to Ashkelon, kills 30 dudes, not even a part of the party. Nobody knows them. He doesn't know them. The 30 companions don't know them. He kills them, steals their Armani suits, and brings them back to pay off his debt. Does this guy have an anger problem? He goes from DEFCON 4 to DEFCON 1. He goes nuclear. It's like, okay, I lost the bet. I'm going to go kill 30 people to pay off my debt who are unrelated. Why did he go so far away? It's pretty easy to figure out, because he could travel back faster than the news would travel back of what he had done. Now, in order to get 30 pairs of garments, 30 sets of clothing from 30 dead men, you have to touch the corpse, which makes you defiled further, right? So he just keeps going down this path. We don't have time to look at it, but in the very next chapter, on another occasion, Samson, because he's angry, to get even, takes 30 foxes, ties their tails together, lights them on fire, so that's animal abuse, lets them go through a field, and the fire of the tails of the foxes gets the crops going, and it burns all of the Philistines' crops. This dude has an anger issue. Okay, after he kills the 30 men, he doesn't even go to consummate the marriage. He goes back to his parents' home, we're told. And look at the last verse. Look what happens. While he's away, his wife marries the best man. I mean, this sounds like a Jerry Springer show. It's been said those who fly into a rage always make a bad landing. This is a very bad landing. This is bad choice after bad choice after bad choice. Do you ever wonder how people like this, with such potential, such empowerment by God's Spirit, such a godly family and godly upbringing, can end up like this? You are seeing the high cost of low living. Now, since we're doing this series on Crash and Burn, and we want to learn from those who fell, and we want to learn to fly, let me give you three quick takeaway points for this message for your life. Number one, take God seriously. Take God seriously. His parents made a vow and committed their son to the Lord, but their son squandered that. You want to find something? You want to hear something interesting? Never once will you find Samson praying until the end of his life, when he is chained to pillars and he finally looks upward and he prays to God, let me avenge my enemies, and he kills himself and he kills them. It's the only time we find him praying. And I know people who are like that. They really don't care much about spiritual things until there's a death, until there's a crisis, until there's a loss, until there's a health issue. You know, it's like when a September 11th happens, everybody's standing around singing Kumbaya and praying for 1 week. And that's it. Then it fades away. Take your God seriously. Second takeaway truth, choose your friends wisely. Take your God seriously, but choose your friends wisely. In the absence of Samson bringing good friends along, 30 bad friends were put in their place because there's a vacuum. Somebody once said, if you want to soar with the eagles, you can't run with the turkeys. My dad used to say things like that to me. You know, you eventually will become like the people you hang out with. That's who you become. And then third, make your choices cautiously. You know, one of the things you understand in studying the life of Samson is how impulsive he was, how impetuous he was. I see a girl. I want her. Yeah, but no, I want her. And then he loses a bet. I'm going to go kill 30 people. I mean, he's just all over the map. He's so impulsive. He's not cautious. He didn't take his parents' advice. He didn't take any time to pray about it at all. I want to close with a proverb. Proverb chapter 8, verse 5. Let me read it to you. It's just good practical stuff. It says, "You who are simple, gain prudence. You who are foolish, gain understanding." He's saying, wise up. You can do this. Wise up. Listen to it in the Message translation. It says, "Listen, you idiots, learn good sense. You blockheads, shape up." How's that for straight talk from God's word? Superpowers don't make superheroes. What really makes a superhero is when a person is empowered by the Spirit of God in daily life to reach the potential that God has designed for each of you, each of us, to fulfill.
God used Samson, but he wanted so much more for Samson, who didn't live in surrender to the Lord. Have you given God complete control of your life? Well, let's head into the studio with Skip and Lenya as they talk about a way we can honor not only God, but some other important people in our lives.
Today, we learned about the first downhill step Samson took to lose his superhero cape. Oh, so sad to see a superhero go down. He disrespected his parents. What? Yeah. You wouldn't think that would be a big one.
But, huge.
Yeah, kids, if you're in the backseat of the car, mom's taking you to school.
It's in the top 10 of the Ten Commandments, right?
Obey way up your there. Mother and father.
That's right.
You mentioned today that parents model God's authority. Skip, how can we honor our parents in a practical way? And do we still honor them even when we're out of the house?
Yeah, you know, I think how you treat your parents, whom you can see, tells a lot about how you relate to God, whom you can't see. One is a visible parent. The other is an invisible Heavenly Father. But you can often see a person's kind of, it's like a gauge to their obedience, their willingness to submit to God by how they submit to authority. And the first authority is in the home. And a couple words come to my mind. And the first is respect. When you talk to parents, you should always use respect. When you talk about your parents, you should always use respect. You know, when I was in high school, I didn't always do this. And I heard people talk about the old man or the old lady, they were referring to their parents, or worse. And I think a bad attitude casts a shadow in the home. The bad attitude can be from parents, but it can also be from kids. And I tell you, just it puts a pall over the whole house. So respect is one. Appreciation is the second word. You know, it costs a parent. Here's the average cost. $250,000 to raise a child by the time that child gets out of the house. And that's paying the parent $1.50 an hour. So it takes a boatload of money, and you know, it's time the kids just say, thank you for all the sacrifice, all the investment you put in my life. And I think that when you dishonor a parent, it crushes that parent's spirit.
I used to do this thing with Nathan, both my hands, mm-hmm. one over my head, one over his head, and I'd do parent, child, and then I'd say, my life makes your life possible.
That's right.
And so if you're a kid, you need to know that, you know. No one tells them they have to be your taxi or sign you up or clean up or do your laundry. And so, it would be nice just to say thank you and I love you and I appreciate
and
you.
And it goes a long way, just a thank you. I remember watching my mom, just her face, how it would sort of melt when I would just pause to say thank you for something and how, yeah, that's the best gift you could give her. And let's throw a shout out to in-laws. Because, in-laws too often become outlaws, and we need to respect those that God has given us in the giving of our spouse.
You've always been really great to my dad, and you thank him constantly when we're with him. Thank you for my wife. Thank you for, you know, the years that you've invested in us. So that's good. And the other thing is when Seth makes a little card, he draws a picture of Papa and mm-hmm. Seth and the sun and the moon. I mean, isn't that just like your favorite thing?
Mm.
Tell me about your file that you have pictures that Seth has drawn just to tell you how much he loves you.
It's Seth and Nate. They go all the way back. I have my stash.
And Cadence. We don't want to leave her out.
That's right.
We're blessed when we hear reports of changed lives. One Connection listener said, "Skip, I recently lost my mother after 5 years of being her primary caregiver. Every morning prior to my mother's passing, your messages gave me a sense of peace and hope. Your radio broadcasts bring so much comfort to my life." Did you know you can help us make these teachings available to more people by partnering with us? Visit connectiononline.org/give or call 800-922-1888 to give a donation.
Join us again tomorrow on The Connection when Skip shares the story about a king who crashed and burned, then admitted his own folly.
Make a connection. Make a connection at the foot of the cross. Cast your burdens on his wood. Make a connection. A connection.
The Connection is a presentation of Connection Communications, connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.